This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Well, bringing you all the up-to-date information on sexual health and well-being. Brought to you by the Victorian AIDS Council on Joy 94.9. Joy.
Good evening and welcome to Well. My name is Tex and tonight my co-host is Jack. Good evening, Jack. How are you?
Hi, Tex. I'm very well, thank you, on this public holiday, Anzac Day 2016. Of course, here at Well, you will continue to hear all about sex, health and well-being in our gender, sex and sexually diverse communities.
Today on our show, we have Graham Willett from the Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives. Joining him will be Noah Wiseman from the Australian Catholic University. They'll be chatting about LGBT folk who have been involved in the armed services, as today, of course, as Jack has already said, is Anzac Day. This is the day we commemorate those who have fought for the freedom and democracy that we enjoy today.
And at the very end of the show, we will be mentioning the forthcoming Lesbian, Bisexual and Queer Women's Health and Wellbeing Conference right here in Melbourne in May.
If you've missed out on any of the last shows, or perhaps you want to hear a show again, or to share it with your friends and mates, you can always download podcasts of previous episodes of Well at the Joy website, joy.org.au/podcasts. And that, of course, is with thanks, as always, to David, our podcaster.
And as today is a public holiday, this show has been pre-recorded, so we are unable to respond directly to any messages, phone calls or emails or any SMSs you may send into us this evening.
Now, Jack, I don't know about you, but my partner and I will have been to the Dawn service today, as we do each year at the Cenotaph in Reservoir. That's where I live, the suburb of Reservoir. Yep. And then we go on to the Gunfire Breakfast at the local RSL. Now, people shouldn't be concerned about the name Gunfire Breakfast. Really, it's bacon, eggs, cup of coffee and a nice cup of tea. It's just the term that they use in the RSL. But Jack, I'm interested, what do you usually do on Anzac Day, or perhaps what have you done in the past on Anzac Days?
Well, like you, I do things to commemorate it. I've been to the Dawn service at the Shrine of Remembrance right here in Melbourne, along with tens of thousands of people. You line up, you listen quietly to some speeches, and they give out, they must have 100,000 sprigs of rosemary. There must be no bushes left after Anzac Day. And they give each member of the public a sprig of rosemary to go through the shrine to drop onto the tomb of the unknown soldier. So following that, of course, they also have a gunfire breakfast, scrambled eggs and bacon and stuff like that, sausages and cups of tea and coffee. So it's well worth doing. But in the previous years, I've been to ones in country areas, in regional Australia, in little place in Clunes. Anyone listening from Clunes? And it really does bring a community together, I think. It puts a focus in small communities who have perhaps disproportionately lost members of the communities in conflict over the years. From the Boer War, World War One, World War Two, Korea, Vietnam, the Middle East, Afghanistan, Malaya, you name it. We've been involved in actions so many times throughout the last century and continue to do so today. So I'll be doing things like that. But I remember also my dad used to go to Anzac Day reunions, and my mother was always a bit horrified by Anzac Day because...
Why was that?
Well, because people would tend to get together. Dad would get together with his mates and no doubt there'd be a bit of drinking, a bit too much drinking. And Mum would make hundreds and hundreds of thousands of sandwiches.
Yep.
Slaving away. We would all be part of the process, the chain gang, if you like, making sandwiches for the guys at Dad's reunion. So it was always a day fraught with anxiety, I think, for Mum, because she knew what it meant. Mm. It meant a lot to Dad and his mates. And strange enough, when we were sorting out some of Dad's belongings after he died, we came across all sorts of letters and... it meant a lot to him because a lot of his colleagues and comrades were actually killed in the Second World War, and we had the letters from the military advising how they had died. So it was terribly confronting. So we girded our loins to let Dad have his day and commemorate, like so many people across the country, Anzac Day in a very personal, on a very personal level, I think.
And more often than not nowadays, of course, with women serving in the services, the armed forces, of course, the marches that happen after the commemorations in the morning, well, there's the big one here in Melbourne, mm-hmm. down Bourke Street, down towards the Shrine of Remembrance.
Down Swanson. Yeah.
Oh, that's right, Swanson. Some of them meet in Bourke Street and Collins Street, and they join in and all march down with usually quite huge crowds of people watching on. Yes. But these marches happen in the small communities in regional and rural Victoria, and indeed, of course, across all of Australia. And we shouldn't forget New Zealand as well, because Anzac includes the NZ of New Zealand.
It is the NZ.
But you were speaking about the disproportionate numbers from smaller communities, rural and regional towns, and you just have to go through some of those places at any time of the year and see the war memorials and the names of people. And quite often there's a father, there'll be a son or several sons, there'll be uncles, or all who share the same surname. And it can be quite confronting to see that.
No, it is. And it makes you remember that the losses that have been endured by this country and by the community generally, and part of that community, of course, have been our members. The GLBTI community have always been there. And it's good to see we've made some inroads in some recognition to the acceptance around GLBTI communities across the board within the military and in a political sense.
Indeed. And as our guests will be sharing with us today, Graham Willett, who's very much involved with the Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives, he'll be talking from all of the different sorts of sources that they have collected over the years. You were mentioning your father's, when you went through your father's stuff after he died. So many members of our community donate parts of their estate to the Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives, and that's where so much of these resources have come in, where we see the records, the personal diaries, the poetry, some of the photographs. It's really quite interesting to see that there have always, as it's no surprise, I guess, to us, that there has always been lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender people who have served, but they are finally being recognised.
And it's a powerful and perhaps hidden archive that the Gay Lesbian Archives have in their midst. So it's a valuable piece of history that is lurking right down there at 6 Claremont Street, South Yarra. So we can learn a lot by going through these archives, and especially in things to do with Anzac Day and the armed services within our community.
Oh, indeed. And the other guest, I shouldn't forget our other guest, Noah Wiseman, who's from the Australian Catholic University. He and Graham have been doing a project where they go out and speak to ex-service personnel.
How good is that?
Who are gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual, and they talk about their experiences of war, and equally their experiences in peacetime now that they're back, and how they integrate themselves into their local RSL, into there's a defence organisation for GLBTI people based in Sydney, but there's a Melbourne branch. There are branches in every capital city. So it should be a really interesting show today, and we're pleased, listener, that you have joined us.
Indeed. Joy 94.9. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, and joining myself, Jack, and Tex, my co-host, tonight is Graham Willett. Graham is from the Lesbian and Gay Archives in Claremont Street, South Yarra. Graham, welcome to Well, Well, Well this evening.
Thank you.
Now, Graham, just to start the ball rolling, we're looking at Anzac Day and how the LGBTI community may have been part of the military services. Is there anything at all that you're aware of in regard to World War One, casting our minds back that far?
Yeah, it's really interesting that there's, in fact, no... There's a multi-volume history of World War One that was produced under kind of official auspices in the 1920s. And in the course of the volume on the medical services, there's a passing reference to the fact that although other countries might have had problems with homosexuality, the Australian forces had no such problem at all.
Hmm.
Now, this might be true. Maybe they didn't have any trouble. Maybe they didn't look for it. It's not very likely that it didn't exist, because there were quite lively... the emergence of homosexual subcultures in places like Melbourne and Sydney was certainly taking place. But that was their view, and unless and until somebody gets a vast amount of money to unleash research assistance into the records, we're not going to find it. It's incredibly difficult to do that stuff. But what we do have at the Lesbian and Gay Archives is one tiny little piece of evidence. It's a book of poetry, a handwritten book of poetry, which was posted to a man in Lakes Entrance from his friend in London. And it's addressed from his friend to my friend from his friend, which is in early 20th century coded language. This is one of the ways homosexuals referred to each other.
Well, that's interesting in itself, the coded language that was used and needed to be used, perhaps.
Yes, and it's a really nice example of how if you just picked that up and didn't know, you wouldn't really know what was going on.
It's innocent.
Having said that, the photo of the author in the front makes him look rather effeminate. It's a bit hard to tell, given photography of the time.
Yeah.
But he seems to have plucked eyebrows, shaded eyeshadow and so on. He's also wearing what looks like a boa, but we think is in fact a flight jacket.
Yes.
And certainly this man was in the military in London, in Britain. He writes in these poems, as I say, it's a handwritten poetry book. He has poems in a comic vein and, you know, different kinds of poems in different sections. But a series of them are war poems from 1916, usually from France. So he seems to have been on the Western Front. We haven't been able to hunt him down any more than that, but it's clear that it's just a bit of an indication that, that, you know, there must have been lots of people like him.
Mm.
As it happened, somebody found this poetry book in a secondhand bookshop, bought it, gave it to us, so it's been preserved.
But just as well they did.
Yes, and it was somebody who knew what they were seeing. So they picked up this book, flicked through it and thought, hello. This is the sort of thing that we should have at the archives, and so we do.
So, not a great deal out of World War One, but is there a wealth of resources or materials from World War Two?
Yes, I think the official version would probably still be there wasn't anything much. But in fact, some years ago, in fact, back in the 80s, Gary Wetherspoon, Robert French, who were kind of pioneer historians of gay Australia, found a very small file in the National Archives which related to homosexuality in World War Two. It was literally just sort of half a dozen pages, and it was kind of a policy statement, although it was clear even then that the Americans were communicating with the Australians, and the Australians were then communicating with various regions in Australia. With a colleague, Yorick Smile, in Brisbane, we managed to track down more of the file. There was a reluctance by the National Archives to release the whole thing, but in the end we got them, although it's heavily kind of censored. We nonetheless have this file which indicates that in 1944, when the Americans were starting to purge homosexuals out of their military, they were active on all fronts, and in New Guinea they found a number of homosexual Americans and decided to get rid of them. But in the course of this they discovered that they were having sexual relationships with Australian men, and so they wrote to the headquarters, which was then in Melbourne, of the Australian military, telling them that they'd found these Australian soldiers involved in these relationships. And as they said, the Australian soldiers were playing the female part.
Wow.
Now, this actually coincides with something Gore Vidal once said, which was Australian servicemen in World War II had a reputation across the South Pacific for rolling over on their stomachs most obligingly. So it does seem as if there's two bits of evidence leading to the same conclusion.
I can just hear Gore Vidal saying that, explaining that in his wonderful delivery.
Yes, it's. I would like to have actually heard him, but you can hear his voice.
What was driving the US authorities to purge homosexuals from their ranks?
Initially, you know, they got dragged into the war in 1941, sort of unexpectedly. So they took everybody.
And
they had conscription.
And then,
and then as things kind of settled down, they realised they were winning the war, they could start to kind of
they
sort
things out.
They could
afford to be particular.
Yep. And it was quite extensive. I mean, we know from the 1980s, there was quite detailed research done on this. So the discovery that they had discovered American homosexual soldiers in the 40s was no surprise in itself.
This is a fascinating conversation. We're looking forward to hearing more. First of all, we need to hear another gorgeous piece of music here on Joy 94.9. This is Anzac Day Night, pre-recording, so you can't contact us, although we would love to hear from you if you have any memories. If you do have memories, you could share them with the Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives, and later on we'll get Graham to share the details of how you can do just that.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. Joining us on the line right now is Noah Reisman. And good evening, Noah, and welcome to our Anzac Day edition of Well, Well, Well.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It's really great for you to be able to be with us tonight. With the understanding that we are pre-recording this show in advance of Anzac Day 2016, what will you have done today, and what perhaps does the day Anzac Day mean to you?
For me personally, interesting question. Well, I'm a historian, and my research looks at, among other peoples, the role of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and intersex people's participation in the Australian Defence Force. Especially since the end of the Second World War. So I've been doing this research with Graham Willett and Charlene Robinson of Macquarie, and also we partnered with DEFCLIS, which is the Defence LGBTI Information Service. Mm-hmm. And what DEFCLIS has been doing since last year is they've organized wreath-layings in Melbourne, Sydney, Canberra. This year, I believe they're doing Brisbane as well. And they've organized these wreath-layings at the conclusion of the dawn services, and I will be attending this wreath-laying in Melbourne with them.
Yep.
In the wreath-laying, what they have been doing is having current members of the ADF, one Navy, one Army, one Air Force, yep, and also an ex-serviceman or ex-servicewoman, together laying these wreaths in commemoration of LGBTI service personnel, past and present.
No, it's Jack here. Can you just tell us, in what year did Australia allow gay, lesbian and bisexual personnel to openly serve in the armed services?
So the Australian reforms were in November of 1992. There were a series of events that led up to it. There was a lesbian who was dismissed from the Navy around 1990-ish for being found out to be a lesbian. And she challenged her dismissal in the Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission, as it was then called. And there was an investigation, and they looked into it, and the commission, basically they said that this shouldn't be happening, but at the moment it wasn't unlawful. But they were negotiating with the ADF to try and get this policy changed. And the ADF wasn't coming to the table on this. So what the HRC did was they invoked international law. They invoked the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, and they said, not allowing gays and lesbians, and by extension bisexual people, to serve was violating international law. And they were very fortunate in finding a champion in the then Attorney General, Michael Duffy. So you had a series of debates within the Labor Party throughout the year 1992, and it culminated in a cabinet showdown, let's say, in November of 92, where the decision did prevail to lift the ban. So it was November 23rd, 1992, when Australia allowed gays, lesbians, and bisexual people to serve openly.
Now, Noah, are you aware if the dropping of this ban has affected the recruitment or the retention rates of, you know, because of the policy change?
It's a good question. I can't completely answer that at the moment because we're early in the research. But what I can say is, not surprisingly, I mean, dropping the ban was a first step and a really important one, I mean, mm-hmm, obviously. But it wasn't going to change everything overnight. And what we found by talking to some of the people who served during the 1990s is you did have this sort of period where, you know, it's been dropped, but am I really going to be tolerated? A lot of it depended on what service you were in, what your job was in the service, rank. There were all sorts of factors at play. I think it would be fair to say that gradually the ADF has become more accepting. And to give the ADF credit, I think it's really especially been in the last, let's say, 5 or 6 years, give or take, that they really have gone out of their way to be much more inclusive.
Okay. Now, you've mentioned you're working on this project with Graham Willett from the Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives. How many people have you interviewed for the project?
Well, the project is in its early days, but we were doing pilot research last year, and through that pilot research, we've interviewed about 25 people, give or take. And these are people who've served from... Actually, there's one gentleman I did interview who served in the Second World War.
Even though
we're not really looking at the Second World War, the opportunity came up, and I thought, well, you know, we're going to take that. All the way through to people who are currently serving.
Were the interviewees willing to discuss their experiences, or were some of them... Do they find it difficult to speak openly to you about them?
Most of them were willing to discuss it. There were a small number who chose to be anonymous in the interviews, and that's an option, and I completely respect that. But the vast majority have been quite open. I think at the end of the day, if you're not going to be open, you probably wouldn't agree to an interview.
Yes.
No, that's true. That's true. But sometimes people are still confronted when it comes to the mic being put in front of them.
No, that's quite true. I try to be a nice person who's relaxing.
Well, of course you would.
You know, hopefully that works.
Yes.
I will quickly, if you don't mind me putting a quick plug in there, we are looking for further interviewees. So if anyone who's listening is or knows someone who is a current or ex-service person who identifies as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or intersex, you or they can register interest. We've got a website. It's www.lgbtimilitaryhistory.com.au.
No, it's really been fantastic. I know it's a short conversation, but it's really been fantastic to hear from you. We have Graham Willett in the studio with us, so perhaps he'll be able to share more in the next segment after we've heard our next track. Thank you so much for being available today, and we do hope that you continue to commemorate and celebrate Anzac Day as you chat to these interesting people.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. You're with Jack and Tex, and joining us, of course, is our great guest, Graham Willett from the Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives. Now, Graham, just before that gorgeous piece of music, you mentioned that you'd found a file. What was in the file?
So this was a complete gold mine. You know, the short version had been known since the 80s. We found all this additional material. It turns out that, well, there's two things going on. One is the headquarters in Melbourne are desperately trying to work out what they should do about this. So they write to all the kind of regional commands in Australia saying, do you get a lot of homosexuals? How do you handle them? What should we do? While that's going on, the chief medical officer in Port Moresby in New Guinea finds out about these men, starts to talk to them, encourages them to invite their friends to come and talk to him. And he seems to have offered them a deal. You give me your life history and I will get you out on medical discharge rather than a disciplinary discharge. Now, that's a much better thing to have. It also gets them out, which I think for a lot of people, getting out of New Guinea would have been a great thing.
Indeed.
So he starts to interview these people. And in the end, he interviews 18 of them and keeps full records of what they said. And they're all produced in first person. So I did this, I did that, I call myself, blah, blah, blah. We don't have these men's names, of course, or serial numbers or any identifying material, but it's clear who they are in terms of, you know, they're all Australians, they're all in their 20s, and they're all camp, which is the word they use themselves. And all the way through the transcript, it's camp with a K, K-A-M-P.
With a K.
Well, it's spelt both ways. It's interesting that it's consistent, but that's probably the transcriber of these things. It's sometimes said to mean known associate of male prostitutes or known as a male prostitute, police abbreviation, but I kind of think that's made up. Anyway, they have this interview with 18 camp men who talk about their life history, you know, their background, what their parents did, sort of social class, their education, when they first started having sex. Had they ever had sex with women? And then how they found themselves in the military, because at this stage it's mostly volunteering, but there's some conscription for New Guinea. Most of them had been to the Middle East and had come back, so they must have been volunteers at some level. They then, of course, what's interesting to us is they talk about their sex lives. And the interviewer is particularly interested in their sex lives in civilian life, whether it was any different in the military. And they talk about things like, did they have sex within their own unit? Some of them did, some of them didn't. Mostly they didn't, of course, for safety. Whether they had sex with American soldiers, and most of them did. Whether they had sex with black American soldiers, and most of them claimed not to have, because that was crossing the race line, which was a huge thing in Australia. It was worse to engage in interracial sex than to engage in homosex. I imagine is how they would have thought of it. So we end up with this extraordinary set of life histories, which is the most complete insight into the lives of ordinary homosexual people. Between the convicts, when it's being watched by the authorities, and the period after the 1970s, when we start talking about ourselves. It's incredibly rich. This is wonderful reading.
It's still very brave of them to give their life history in the context of the times, not really knowing where that may end up or how it could be used. Even if you're promised a medical discharge, which would safeguard a few things for you down the track, would still be pretty brave and stepping into the unknown, if you like.
And we don't know if they got medical discharge, because while there's this parallel thing going on in Melbourne, they command come to the conclusion that in general we shouldn't be discharging people on medical grounds just because they're homosexual, because then everybody will claim to be homosexual so they can get out
of
the army.
Of course, you know how popular it would be, yes.
So because we don't know anything about these individual men's, and the file just kind of stops all of a sudden, it's entirely impossible to tell what really happened to them.
So if you need to track, somebody needs to track somebody down who has the first-hand knowledge.
Yes,
and
somebody who was
you.
There would be brilliant. We hoped the doctor might have written this up in a medical journal or something, but we can't find any evidence of that either.
Now, Graham, just out of interest, you said that they're from all different sorts of classes. Is it, were they mostly working class? Were they mostly, if you like, upper class, as people would have thought at the time, or, you know, sort of middle class? I don't know if we had middle class back then.
Mm. Mostly working class, just from the look of the kind of occupations that their fathers had. Most of their mothers apparently didn't work, except at home. So it looks as, and then they talk about occupations that they'd had. Some of them worked in Myers, for example. David Jones and places like that. So, but that was an upward step for a lot of working class men.
Sure.
You know, you could work somewhere like that in a white collar job, and that was a step up. Others had, you know, conventional working class manual occupations. Nobody seriously upper class, but you kind of wouldn't expect them to be in New Guinea in the kind jobs that these people were doing, because they mostly weren't frontline soldiers. They were often in kind of the service. Parts of the services.
Once again, we've had another fascinating segment, and we're looking forward to hearing more. We do need to hear some more music and perhaps some lovely messages. This is Well, Well, Well. We're with our guest, Graham Willett, from the Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives, and you're with Jack and Tex here on Well, 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 here on Joy 94.9.
For over 25 years, the Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives have been collecting and preserving Australia's queer history. A not-for-profit organisation, the Archives rely on your support through membership, financial and queer memorabilia donations. To find out more, email algarchives@hotmail.com or web search the Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives.
April is Australia's biggest blood pressure check.
Get a free blood pressure check that might just save your life.
High blood pressure is a key risk factor for stroke and a silent killer. The only way you know you have it is to get checked.
With 300 locations around Australia, including every Priceline pharmacy and selected Westfield shopping centres, find your nearest location at strokefoundation.com.au.
Join the Stroke Foundation and Priceline Pharmacy this April and get checked in Australia's biggest blood pressure check.
A community service announcement supported by Joy.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, and joining Tex and myself this evening is Graham Willett from the Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives. Now, Graham, it was a pretty hostile environment way back in those World War II days, and of course there was Korea and Vietnam, but the attitudes of the authorities, have they changed in any way? Have there been emerging trends that we can determine and to delineate, if you like?
Yep. The hostility remained true for a very long time. In the 1960s, it seems fairly clear that there was a purge of lesbians out of the armed forces. Tiny little bits and pieces of information. But again, this project that Noah and Charlene and I are involved in, we're starting to find out more about that. So, you know, come back in 12 months and I think we'll know a lot more about that. Mm. More recently, of course, and for those of us who grew up expecting that the military would be hostile to people like us, there's been this kind of extraordinary transformation towards, often dragged, kicking and screaming towards the acceptance. You know, Noah was talking about the Human Rights Equal Opportunity Commission case. There was another one in the 90s where somebody was being victimised for its HIV status. So often the military would resist these transformations. But the problem is they're in a world that's changing. And people are changing. They want to recruit people, even if they don't want to recruit lesbians and gay men,
they're
bisexuals,
recruiting
transgender and intersex, they're getting them. And they're getting people whose attitudes have changed. So even heterosexual soldiers don't necessarily share the values of the more, you know, the older and more conservative senior command. Now, it's not a simple matter of generation and rank, because in fact there's some pretty horrible behaviour going on in the ranks. But nonetheless, I think the transformation to the point now where, you know, openly trans people serve.
Well, exactly. Like, we've got the leading officer who was New South Wales Person of the Year.
Yep, Kate McGregor.
Yes, the transgender person, Kate McGregor.
And she, you know, she made the transition. She came out as somebody who's transitioned, but the senior command supported her in this, and publicly supported her. It wasn't just a matter of turning a blind eye. How that happened is, I think, one of the really interesting parts of this project. How did the military change so dramatically?
Because it seems to be a long time coming, but all of a sudden there's been dramatic change. So what is the driving force? Where's the political imperative in the whole?
A lot of course, is from people standing up and asking, expecting, demanding that their human rights be respected. A lot of it is that the culture has changed. It's very much harder now to be openly homophobic, although the debates around why they should be are often quite interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting when you were talking about whether these organisations, these defence forces, are openly wanting people to join them. It's interesting because they have stalls at community festivals like Midsummer, in Pride March, as well as the police, the Victorian police, the federal police. We also have Defence Force personnel marching in uniform, which can only give a positive message to people who may be thinking along the lines of joining some of the forces. I mean, it was always, if you were unemployed and there was nothing else for you to do, then joining the armed forces was often thrown in because there was an education base there as well.
And certainly we're discovering, even just early indications from interviewing lesbians for this bigger project, that some of them joined because they expected to find lesbians there. Mm-hmm. So, the authorities are doing and saying one thing, but word on the street is something quite different. And the tensions between that, I think, are really interesting and important.
Oh, I see a big book coming.
I see, yes, books,
there's certainly a big article.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Graham, it's been really interesting to have you join us. Just fascinating to have you join us. And as you said, you just said something just a few moments ago of, we're only just finding out this information. Speak to us in a year's time, and perhaps there'll be more of this story to tell. So just before I say, it'd be great to have you back in a year. How can people get involved with you, perhaps in relation to the project of talking to people in the armed service who have been in the armed services and perhaps are still in the armed services? But also, how do you people get in touch with you in relation to the Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives? People, as Jack said earlier on, you may not have heard, but Jack said he was clearing through his father's belongings after he died, and they found his service records and letters that he'd exchanged with people. And whilst they had nothing to do with lesbian, gay or bisexual people, there must be records hidden away, perhaps like that book of poetry from World War One, which was rediscovered in a bookshop.
Yes, that's right. I mean, people turn stuff up all the time, or they find themselves having a conversation with family or friends and information appears. The Australian Lesbian Gay Archives is always interested in hearing from anybody who's got anything about Australia's queer history. And the project, the sort of Serving in Silence, is the project that Noah and Shirlene are involved in. It has a website, www.lgbtimilitaryservice.com.au. But find the archives, Australian Lesbian Gay Archives, Google searches, we turn up.
Indeed, your favourite search engine, perhaps the one starting with G, and just type in Lesbian Gay Archives, Australia, Victoria, they'll zero into it. I know it's the Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives, but we're very parochial here, based in Victoria. Graham, it's been great to have you in. Thank you for joining us. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9, of course. What am I saying? This is the Anzac Day edition. And, of course, this has been a pre-record. So earlier, Jack, we were talking, we talked with Noah, and we've had an extensive chat with Graham Willett from the Australian Lesbian and Gay Archives. Gosh, that was interesting.
It's fascinating, and there must be so much more, some little gems out there in people's parents' or grandparents' cupboards and drawers. So don't just throw things out. If somebody moves on to a nursing home or somebody passes away in the family, go through the stuff, read what they've got, because there's gems out there, I'm sure.
Oh, there are indeed. Yeah. And never throw the stuff away anyway, says the collector.
But also, as they found that little gem, the book of poetry in an op shop, when you're next in an op shop, just cast a glance over things that may be of value to some historical perspective of the GLBTI community. So, and be in touch with the archives if you should find something.
Indeed.
It's out there.
Now, you mentioned at the top of the show that we're going to be talking about the Lesbian, Bisexual and Queer Women's Conference. It's coming up. It's the second annual now, isn't it?
It is. It's in May.
Indeed. And it's officially called the Lesbian, Bisexual and Queer Women's Health and Wellbeing Conference, Connections, Creativity, Care. Now, this is presented by VAC, the Victorian AIDS Council, and ACON, and they're proud to bring you this one-day national conference focusing on the health and well-being of lesbian, bisexual and queer women. The conference is going to explore best practice and the available research in working with LBQ women around mental health, sexual health, alcohol and other drug use, and broader women's health issues. There'll be a range of workshops and presentations from industry experts, health and human service providers, and community members. Now, who's that important person who's going to be involved?
Oh, lots of important people. Rowena Allen, the
Sex and Discrimination Commissioner.
Rowena Allen, who is not to be confused with so many other Rowenas out there.
Oh, indeed. Now, the conference aims to... VAC and ACON are aiming to make this conference as accessible as possible, and nobody's going to be turned away for lack of funds. Now, for details on the conference, you can go to the VAC website, simply vac.org.au, or if you want to go directly to the page involved, it's vac.org.au/, you ready for this? LBQWHC 2016, as in figures. So it's much easier to go to vac.org.au, because when you click onto the VAC website, the very first thing that pops up is notice about this conference, and you can just click on there and you'll find out more about it.
And that's on May the 27th.
Oh, is it?
Didn't
have the date down.
No, but I'm aware of what's
the 27th of May. And it's a one-day conference, but last year's conference, people spoke so glowingly
of. And it was a sellout. It was oversubscribed.
Now, of course, we're coming up towards the end of the show, Jack.
We are.
We've had a great show. I hope everyone has had a great Anzac Day. That's commemorating those who have fought and died for the freedom and the democracy that we enjoy. Now, in the event that you miss this show, if you're not missing this show because you're hearing it, but perhaps previous shows, be sure to check out our podcasts, the Well, Well, Well podcasts, and you can find them on the Joy website, joy.org.au/well-well-well. And we will be back next week, same time, same bat channel, 94.9, Joy 94.9. Have a great night, everyone, and thanks for being with us today. Cheerio.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.